Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the challenged voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Oh, go on.
You've had a challenge, not a challenge so much, really, I should say, but we've had a tweet in response to your ridiculous penalty idea.
Really?
Yes. Yes, Jordan Platt. And Jordan has said, perhaps the solution for the penalty debate would be for the ref to mark out an adequate area of, say, 2 to 3 steps from the goal line with a temporary spray. Then the goalkeeper is free to move within this area during the run-up.
Oh, I like that.
Gritty.
Now, what I would say is that although I've suggested an idea, and it is a little bit out there, I am open to other ideas. My point is that something needs to change. My point is that it's broken as it is. The reward for a penalty is too high. Therefore, we see a lot more diving, I believe. The chance for goalkeepers saving it is becoming less and less. But no, something like that I think is brilliant. Almost like you could almost have like another little semicircle within where it's like that is your area to move so that you're not actually stuck to your line. Because the point is that if you're not allowed to move off your line, you can't ever generate the momentum to get a decent dive away. So it's just going to become easier and easier for strikers to score. But no, I really, really like that idea. Very good.
It's a good idea. My only fear with having another semicircle or more sprays that you've already got the 6-yard box, suddenly you've got all these different lines, it's going to be really confusing.
And that's actually one thing. For all the things that have changed in football, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we've ever added markings to the field. Because in theory, you could just have a really small semicircle in the centre of the goal that is almost like your area that you can move on when you've got a penalty so that you can then start on your line but take a step forward to get the momentum to dive. But no one's ever done that. They've never actually changed the markings on the pitch. I want to say that's true.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
So there you go. But no, great idea. Look, I'm more than happy to be challenged. You know, there are times where I might get a little bit feisty, but if I think it's a worthwhile challenge, which that certainly is, then absolutely fire ideas across.
Nothing wrong with feistiness, Richard. Feistiness is the flavour of football.
I feel like you've just made that up. That's definitely not a saying.
Well, if you'd like to challenge Richard, any more ideas that you've got, throw them our way on Twitter at GK Union. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. Okay, we are going to now look at the weekend's action as per. First up, we are going to do something that I don't think in the history of doing this particular edition of the podcast we've ever done, and that is talk about an Edison error.
Yeah, I know, and it's very unusual. Do you know what I'm going to say about this weekend first, before we talk about the Edison error, was this weekend, before the games took place, I predicted there would be errors, and the reason being the weather was horrendous this weekend. Now, people don't necessarily fully appreciate this, but if you're playing in gusts of up to 70 miles an hour, which is what they had at the game, Bournemouth-Manchester United, it was wet, it was very windy, the ball's going to zip off the turf, the ball's going to move in a slightly different direction. So it didn't surprise me that we've seen errors this weekend. And from Edison, it was an error. It was an uncharacteristic error. I've got no doubt the conditions will have played a part in it. He will have been very disappointed. You can see in the moment that he was very disappointed. And it's quite a basic error, really. His technique was okay. He just misjudged the flight of it ever so slightly. And it doesn't have to pop out that far. And, of course, there was somebody on the spot to put it in. And it's an unfortunate error.
Well, that somebody was James Ward-Prowse. So the shot was from Stuart Armstrong.
You know, I've got no interest who shot. I've got no interest who scored.
With Stuart Armstrong, a shot from outside the area, it skidded along the surface. And yeah, he spilled it. James Ward-Prowse has come in and responded and lashed it in.
Well, there you go. Spill from Edison. Look, I don't care who shoots. I don't care who scores. I care about the goalkeeper. From his point of view, I go back to it. It did move ever so slightly. I will say that. He's disappointed with it. You can see in the moment straight away he was disappointed.
So what's he done? What's wrong with the technique?
There's not necessarily anything wrong with the technique. This is, and sometimes this will happen. Do you know what? I actually went to a game yesterday, and there was a really interesting one in an under-23s game that I went to, where when the ball's struck and it's close to you, sometimes it can be struck with power, and because it's that close, it's too close for you to parry. You have to hold. And sometimes they're the most difficult ones, because imagine you're diving down to your right, but it's not quite wide enough that you can angle your hands to parry it away. It's almost inside. So it might be diving, but it's going towards your stomach or maybe low-end chest. You now have to hold it. So it makes it a very different type of shot. The similarity with Edison's is that it's moving a bit. The initial instinct might be, I just want to get this away. I just want to parry it. But when it's that close to you, you have to try and hold it, which is actually a really difficult skill. So more often than not, it is an error. And of course, when you see the ball spilled, it's always, or majority of the time, it's going to be considered an error. But they can be one of the hardest ones to hold, because especially when it's wet, windy, the ball's moving a little bit, people don't fully appreciate just how good it is of a goalkeeper to be able to hold the ball. So sometimes when you see that real clean scoop, or they've dived down to their right. In fact, Dubravka made a brilliant one this weekend, which probably didn't get the credit it deserved early on. Down to his right, it's in the slot, and he's held it. Held it really well. That won't necessarily get the credit, because people are like, well, no, you should hold it. It's close enough to you that you should hold it. But it's a really difficult skill. You almost prefer it to be slightly wider, because then you do have the decision of parrying or holding. And then you can parry. And it's a much safer technique to parry, of course. Safer for a goalkeeper. It's a much easier technique. That's probably the right word. To parry it away from danger than to try and graft the ball and try and hold the ball. And I just think with this one, where it is moving, it's a horrible day. It's a difficult technique. So yes, it's an error, but it's not a dreadful error, because actually to hold it clean is a difficult skill, which is why so many goalkeeper coaches, they focus heavily on the basics. And I'm sure you guys listening in, you goalkeepers listening in, your goalkeeper coaches will focus so heavily on the basics, because often you get the basics right. That's where you then get appreciated for the great saves that you make.
Well, it wasn't costly. Of course, Man City fought back to beat Southampton. But in the other end of the pitch was Alex McCarthy. Yep. He'd come in, and I don't know how you feel about this one. I don't know whether this is a tactical managerial change, whether they felt like it was just right for Angus Gunn to have a break. But obviously, the game before this, yes, they played in the Carabao Cup, but in the Premier League, he conceded 9 against Leicester. Now, we went through this last week. He wasn't particularly at fault, maybe the James Maddison free kick. But what do you make of the fact that McCarthy came back in?
I think that there's a couple of parts to this. I don't think there's a great deal of difference between the two goalkeepers, for a start. I think Southampton are blessed, and they've even got Fraser Forster, who, of course, is doing brilliantly up at Celtic. So they've got two very good goalkeepers, and I can imagine there's very little between them. So when you've conceded 9 goals, and was Angus Gunn at fault? We touched on a couple of the goals that maybe, maybe not. When you're facing a team and you've got 15 shots on target or whatever it was in the game, then he was a very, very busy goalkeeper. I think even with Alex McCarthy in goal, it probably still would have been 9. So if there is an opportunity to make a change, you can imagine as well, my guess would have been that Alex McCarthy, who's desperate to play, the team's just conceded 9. You put yourself in his shoes, he would expect a chance. Now, whether that's harsh or not, it's the truth. And I did it myself when the team lost heavily. That would be the point where I'd go into the manager and say, you need to give me a chance. Because it's not necessarily just the goals. It's the impact a change can have on the team. It might be his communication. It might be that he's a little bit more dominant. Now, in terms of his performance, he obviously played the cup game during the week as well. So that gave him a nice little run up to this particular game. On the whole, Alex McCarthy played very well. He made a really good save under the bar, reaction save. His game generally was fine. I think he'll be a little bit disappointed with the winning goal. He's come for the cross. Look, on another day, he gets that big hand to it like he does. It goes away from danger. They draw the game 1-1, and we're looking at a real top display to go to City and keep them to 1. Unfortunately for him, his parry could only go as far as... no, I know it was Cole Walker. I'm only playing. But it could only go as far as him. And unfortunately, it was a brilliant finish from him. And that's where then people will ask the question, oh, could you have put it into a safer area? Sometimes you are hoping for just that little bit of luck. He didn't have it on this occasion. I think he'll have done enough to secure his place for now. I think they'll certainly give him another game. And again, we'll wait to be seen. From Angus Gunn's point of view, it'll be disappointing, of course, because he will look at it and feel that, well, I didn't make any major errors. Should I really have been dropped? It'll be a really interesting fight between those two. And I don't think it'll be Alex McCarthy now who plays the remainder of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if we see them swapping back and forth one or two more times.
This is where it fascinates me, because this is where I always think, crikey, it must get a little bit awkward, a little bit weird. And you said that McCarthy, or you said if it had been you, you'd have been knocking on the manager's door. Do you think that McCarthy would have actually done that? Would have been like, Gaffer, get me in?
Yes, I think most players do it. And my advice to goalkeepers is do. Like, look, as much as they'll be friendly to each other, of course, they will be friends. I mean, I'm friends with all the goalkeepers I play with. I still talk to the likes of Simon Moore, David Button, Ben Foster, whoever it was, Scott Loach, whoever it was that was my so-called rival at the time. You're ordinarily quite good friends because you've got something major in common with them. And naturally, you're going to get on. You know, two goalkeepers tend to get on. So once you have the realization that, look, it's not me against you. Ultimately, the manager's going to make the decision. So my advice to every goalkeeper is if you feel that you deserve a chance, go and tell them. Because imagine, put yourself in the manager's shoes. And actually, this is advice I would definitely give, and do listen to this. Put yourself in the manager's shoes. Now, you've just lost the game heavily, 9-0. What is it that you want? You want your sub-goalkeeper to come in and say, I should play. I'm ready to play. You put me in the team and I'll make sure that we have a more positive result next time. That's what you want. That will give you confidence to then put them in. Now, if they don't come and see you, you might be 50-50 in your mind. Who do I play? And they might then choose to play Angus Gunn. So it just gives you a better chance of being able to influence the manager. And if you go in positively, you go in confidently and say, look, I'm ready to play. I think I deserve a chance. I'm training well. I'm working hard. Give me my chance. The manager, that will influence a manager. 100% that will influence a manager.
Well, that is Alex McCarthy, a current number two, coming in as a number one. Another man who was a number two and has come in as a number one is Roberto for West Ham. Now, listen, he made six decent saves. First and foremost, in the game with Newcastle, the defeat to Newcastle, he made six good saves, but those are definitely not going to be remembered.
They're not. I mean, look, since Fabianski got injured, West Ham haven't had a win. Fabianski, if anything, we spoke on the show about the difference between Lloris getting injured and the difference between Fabianski getting injured. And with Lloris, I made the point that I think it's now given Gazzaniga a chance to stake a claim. And I think that's true. Do I think Roberto would ever have had a chance to stake a claim? No. However, if anything, what I think's happened is that Fabianski now is going to be valued even more than he was previously. Now, first and foremost, you mentioned it, Roberto made some great saves, and he is obviously a top keeper. Now, it's tough to step in for someone who is a bit of a legend, which he is already. Fabianski, not been there that long, but he's been that good that West Ham fans absolutely adore him. Let's look at the game itself. There was a couple of moments in it where you think he should be doing slightly better. Look, he's misjudged the cross, first and foremost. I'll go back to what I made before, that it wasn't great conditions. I'm sure that the cross may have died on him slightly. His angle of attack was wrong and he's ended up in no man's land, and it's made it very easy for the attacking player to score the goal. Then the free kick from distance. I think, given the age of Roberto, I just don't think he's necessarily got the athleticism to get himself across and get down. And this is where it fascinates me, and I don't necessarily blame Roberto for this, but I would talk about the recruitment strategy from West Ham, where I think from a goalkeeping department, what you want ordinarily, and I think it's well known that I've helped Bristol City do this, where you have your number one, who is your outstanding goalkeeper, is somebody that you know could be worth a lot of money, could progress to the Premier League in Bristol City's case, and can end up helping them get promoted. Who knows? From West Ham's point of view, it needs to be that. It needs to be your world-class number one who is outstanding. You've got that in Fabianski. Now, your number two needs to be of a similar quality, but happy to be a number two, maybe slightly older, ever so slightly, but somebody who's happy to be a number two, but you know they can step in and play 15-20 games if need be. You then have a number three who would be a Roberto type, no disrespect to him, but somebody who is experienced, somebody that can step in for a couple of games if needed, but probably not much more than that. It concerned me when I heard that Fabianski's injury was as long as it was, because I questioned whether Roberto's got the ability to go in and play 10-15 games that he might have to, because that's a significant chunk of the season. So I would go back to the recruitment policy. The other part of it as well is you want a one and two who are very similar in terms of how they play. Because if you're bringing in a number two to play a few games, then they need to be able to play in the same mould as your number one. Again, I don't know if that's necessarily the case and whether West Ham have found that.
The second goal in particular from Federico Fernandez, he was in absolute no man's land. To be fair, it reminded me of a goal. I can't remember who it was. It was Hull City, a playoff semi-final, I think it was.
It was. Look, it happens. Okay, it happens. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I made a lot of mistakes. And you're right, there was a similarity to it where we've all been there. You think you can come for a cross. You think you can come for a high ball. You either misjudge the angle of attack or you misjudge the cross itself. How many times do we see it where a goalkeeper comes and the striker gets there ahead? For me, his angle of attack was just slightly wrong. And that might have been because of the conditions, because we've all had that where you come for a cross and suddenly the ball just dies on you. And it's that horrible feeling where you're chasing it and you're running after it. The striker gets there first. You end up on the floor 12 yards out thinking, like, why did I even come? And it's just because your eyes pick it up the moment it's struck. And if it does die on you and you've already chose your angle of attack, it's so hard to change mid stride, which is exactly what Roberto had. He'd already made his angle of attack. In the end, he was hugely wrong, and it looks so soft when you're stood in no man's land. As you say, exactly what happened to me against Hull City many years ago. And it's a horrible feeling, because the moment you're halfway, then it's like, well, it's too late to go back. You either come the whole way, or in my case, in Roberto's case, you end up stopping somewhere in the middle of nowhere and you end up getting beaten very easily. He will be massively disappointed with that, and I think he'll be disappointed with a third as well. It's a long way out from Jonjo Shelvey. It's a great free kick. Credit to him. Well, let's touch on the positives as well. He did make several excellent saves. He is a very, very good goalkeeper, but I just think the mixture of stepping in for someone as good as Fabianski and who has got the reputation as Fabianski is always going to be very, very tough. And I just think that secondly, I don't think he's the type of goalkeeper to step in for 10-15 games. I don't think that West Ham have thought this through. And by the way, other teams have done the same. That I think a number two goalkeeper now in the Premier League is absolutely crucial. You need somebody who is fantastic, who's almost as good as your number one, because it only takes an injury to your number one. And if your number two isn't as good or within a couple of percent of being as good as the number one, then you could find yourself in serious trouble given how good the Premier League is.
Indeed. Well, that is five league games now without a win since Fabianski was replaced by Roberto. Actually, they've been in free fall since they were annihilated by Oxford in the Carabao Cup, to be fair. And speaking of which, Richard, Simon Eastwood, Oxford United, a penalty hero in the Carabao Cup during the week.
Indeed. Smoothly done, by the way. I see how you're moving this on very nicely. And he was, and he's had a very good record so far in the league. Lots of clean sheets. Oxford fans, look, he's a hero there already. He's been there several seasons now, player of the season a couple of times as well. And he's having an excellent season so far. And they're looking very, very good. Of course, they now have a tie against Man City lined up, which will be a bit of a challenge, I'm sure. But they've looked really good in the cup games so far. Of course, excellent in the league. Bearing in mind, they didn't start brilliantly. They've had some fantastic results. They're scoring goals at will. Defensively, I think they had the most clean sheets, certainly until the last couple of weeks. I think it's seven clean sheets or something like that so far this season. So it's all going along very, very nicely for Oxford in both the league and cup.
You actually spoke to Simon on the breakfast show on Love Sport, didn't you?
I did indeed. Yes, he had some interesting things to say.
Well, let's listen to him right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the Keith coach, Wayne Brown. He does that, does a lot of digging into the opposition penalty takers. And yeah, to be fair to him, the penalty that I actually saved, the last penalty, if it wasn't for him, I'm probably going to dive the other way. I looked over and seen him, he was pointing the way that he actually went on the night. So yeah, luckily he did his own work, I dived that way. And yeah, obviously that was the winning penalty save to send us through. And it was a great night.
Well, that was Simon Eastwood, Oxford United goalkeeper. They actually have the longest unbeaten run in the Football League at the moment, 12 games as things stand. A team that were really struggling to buy a win were Morecambe. Very interestingly, Jim Bentley has obviously moved on to AFC Fylde. Barry Roach, the Morecambe goalkeeper, the wily old campaigner who had played in every game this season, has stepped in with Kevin Ellison as caretaker manager, and he dropped himself for the first game.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
He played every game this season. Listen, 37 years old. He is caretaker manager with Kevin Ellison, who also dropped himself as well. Mark Halstead came in. Clean sheet victory.
Fantastic. Do you know what? There is something to that as well. I guess when you're taking on a role, and my assumption is that they'll want to do it to the best of their ability and stake a claim, etc., etc., then of course, maybe it makes more sense, rather than taking on those responsibilities and taking on the responsibilities of playing, it makes more sense to focus on one fully. And if you know that the guy that can step in is very good, which of course he is, then I understand this. This will be a case of almost doing it for the team. Now, it might be the case that in time he'll obviously come back into the team potentially, but certainly initially when you want to set your stall out, it does make sense.
Now, Mark Halstead came in. He's been playing for a long time now, since turning pro with Blackpool in 2009. Only around 130 career appearances. So this is an opportunity for him.
It is indeed. Yeah, no, look, if it's you get an opportunity at that level, then of course he'll want to step in. You mentioned he got a clean sheet, and what will often happen on the back of that is you'll get at least another game or two. And you often find that with goalkeepers when they step into a situation like that. And we're seeing it in various leagues. Another good example, Jake Eastwood, I know, stepped in for Scunthorpe at the weekend. And it's a case of, you keep the clean sheet like he did, you'll be given another game. But I talk a lot about building credit. Now, how much credit do you build? Now, we'll use an example, something like an Edison. There you go. The amount of credit that he's built. How many mistakes would he need to make in order to be dropped? David De Gea, great example. Bearing in mind, he's got the quality of Romero behind him, but years worth of building credit. Good game after good game after good game. And before you know it, you become that established number one, and you know that you've got the safety of potentially 3, 4, 5 mistakes. Get out of jail free cards, if you will, where you know that you've got that. And I think that's quite a nice way of looking at it. If you're trying to build a season, each game that you play, again, just builds that little bit more credit. And certainly on a personal point of view, when I played, I often looked at it like that, where, and that's not to say that a bad game, you should then get nervous thinking, oh, I'm going to make 3 or 4 more mistakes and I might lose my play. No, do you know what? Look at it as building a season. If you have that game 0-0, you don't have a lot to do, that's fine. Just keep building that credit over and over and over. And certainly when he's had his opportunity, kept a clean sheet, he will get another opportunity, but it is just one more opportunity. He won't have a lot of credit just yet, but if he keeps doing what he's doing, then he'll be fine.
So that is Mark Halstead, who started his career at Blackpool, actually played one Premier League game for Blackpool, came off the bench.
There you go.
To replace Richard Kingston in their defeat to Chelsea back in the 10-11 season. A season after, tell you who else came along to Blackpool.
Go on.
Is Mark Howard. Now, Mark Howard came in, had a very short spell with the club. I think he was there for 5 months or so. He's now back with Blackpool, but ruptured his Achilles last season. So he's been on his way back to recovery. Had a 7-day emergency loan at Salford a couple of weeks ago. That was extended for another week. 3 games unbeaten with the club. They've gone up to 11th in League Two. He saved an 80th minute penalty against Newport last week.
Fantastic, which I believe got them a draw.
It got them a victory.
Got them a victory. Fantastic. Look, anyone that's had that moment, and it's very rare that all the stars align like that, that you get a penalty in the last few minutes of a game that can guarantee victory or guarantee a draw. You often see it when the penalty is given. What you know is that it's an opportunity. Now, we know as goalkeepers, everyone listening in, that you don't often get the chance to be a hero. There can be games where you can only impact it as much as the game comes to you. You know, you can't always guarantee that you're going to go out and play a great game, because often you might not touch the ball. Or the opposite might happen, where you have 4 shots, but they're 4 worldy shots that go in the top corner and you concede 4 goals. So there's only so much you can control. But when those opportunities do come, my only advice on them, and it always has been, is go all out. If you've got a penalty against you, regardless of when it is in the game, go all out. Don't ever have that regret thinking, oh, do you know what, if I'd have just put a bit more of a dive in, or if I'd have just stuck to my initial gut instinct, because it's not always diving as well. That's the other thing. It might be standing still sometimes, but whatever your gut instinct is and you're confident you're going to go with it, give it absolutely everything, because then at least you'll have no regrets. And sometimes, like Mark Howard, you'll be the hero.
Classic 7-day loan as well. I love those. You just come in for a little bit, get some fitness, get some games, and make an impression.
Be the hero. Round of applause. See you later.
See you later. Yeah, he'll be battling
Salford. Completed it, mate.
Mate, you are down with the kids. Funnily enough, Newport had gone 16 games unbeaten at home, so it was quite an important victory in that sense. A team going into their 16th game, having not won any of their previous 15 this Friday against Norwich, is Watford. Yeah. Of course, they lost to Chelsea at the weekend, but that doesn't matter. Let's talk about Ben Foster's header in the dying moments.
Well, let's talk about Ben Foster full stop. He was fantastic. I watched this game start to finish. Should have been 6-0 to Chelsea comfortably by the time that Watford got their penalty. But of course, they did get their penalty last minute. Ben comes up. And it's a very good header. A header going right in the bottom corner. Credit to Kepa, by the way, because he made the save look reasonably comfortable in the end. But he only did that because of his decision-making. He dropped back to his line, took up the perfect position. And this is where a save can look quite comfortable and you can be like, oh, well, you know, it was never going to go in. But actually, Ben Foster can't do a lot more. He's got a good head to it. It's going. He's got a big head, by the way. We used to give him a lot of stick about that.
Has he?
Yeah, huge head.
It doesn't look like it.
Oh, massive head. Yeah, he has. That was something that was the banter at Watford back in the day. Like, yeah, massive head. But he did. He got his head to it. It's a great header going down into the corner. Credit to Kepa. Dropped to his line. Took up a good position. Body weight was forward. Got down sharp to his left. Big hand. Round the post. Wins him the game.
Great interviews after the game about the fact that he'd retire. That would be me done if that had gone in. Lovely reaction between the pair of them. Obviously went and embraced in a goalkeeper's union hug. And the stat that's come out that everybody is talking about that was caught after the game was that he now has the same number of shots on target in the Premier League as Divock Origi and Paul Pogba.
I know. It's concerning for those individuals, of course. But just to touch on his performance in general, and I was buzzing with him. Just I thought that he's got a little bit of stick this season, which I think is pretty harsh, personally, from the bits I have seen. But I think this game in particular, this was Ben Foster at his best. Some of the saves that he made, and I'll go through a couple in particular. The top hand onto the bar, just a fantastic save. Made a great save with his foot second half. And again, it's the something that Ben's always had, and even from the time that I played with him, where he was quite raw back then, I'd say. Certainly in his first season with Watford, I think some of the fans will remember some of the mistakes he made where he was quite raw. But the thing he's always had is that brute power. And he's got a real good way of setting. So anyone that watches him, watch the way in which he sets. And he's landing as the ball's shot, and he's got such explosivity. And there's a save he made where he's tipped it onto the bar where you just see it. It's that moment of raw power where he just explodes. It is effectively that. And it's the advice, again, I give to goalkeepers, where if you can get into that mindset that any shot, whether it's just a simple volley in training, get your set so that as the ball's being struck, you are hitting the floor ready to go, and you are ready to have that plyometric power to go right, left, or if you need to stay still, that's fine too. Ben's got that in abundance, and he's always had that. And even at the age he is now, which he's 37, I want to say, or maybe 36, turning 37 in the new year, even at his age, he's still got the same explosive power that he had as a 25-year-old.
Yeah, it was the fullest of stretches save that I loved, where he literally strained every little sinew
corner
to get
great footwork as well, because that was a looping header back across him. And you're right, brilliant footwork, gets up and it's fingertips. And actually to have the awareness and the ability and the skill to get the ball to a safe area as well, because it wasn't just the fact he got there. He's managed to just turn it around the post, the deftest of touches, but a fantastic save.
Mm. On many other weeks, that might well have been our keeper capers. However, this week, it isn't. It's something else.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Couple of keeper capers this week. First up, we're moving to Greece. Atromitos goalkeeper Christos Mandas. They lost 3-2 to AEK Athens. And the two errors, well, one error, one unfortunate incident, pretty much cost them defeat.
Yeah, I'd say two errors. If
would you?
I would, and only because of the first one, and again, we can see this on our Twitter page, I believe.
Yes,
fantastic.
Indeed.
So the first one, more for the way in which he goes down. Look, the ball's kind of moving away from him, and it's a slightly awkward way in which he's gone down to his left, and he's ended up getting fingertips to it onto the post, but I think he can get more of a contact on it. And I've done this myself, actually. I ended up injuring myself diving in this sort of way, when you almost think it's going to go down for a scoop initially, and then the scoop soon turns into a collapse. Well, you've already started going down for the scoop, which the moment it starts going away from you, then try and change your body angle to then move your hand and go down for a collapse save, and he's somewhere in between in the end. So he gets fingertips to it. Unfortunately for him, he then does collapse. The ball hits the post, hits him, and goes in. Now, I'm sure most of us have conceded a goal like that. I certainly remember conceding a few like that, where it hits the post, comes back, hits you, and goes in. One of the most frustrating things and unfortunate things. The second one, however, and you do wonder whether the first one's impacted the second one, because it's tough. When you've made a mistake in a game, or you feel like you've made a mistake, it's easy to give the advice that you need to focus on the moment and get yourself back in the game. Get yourself back to where you were before you made the mistake. Now, for some, they find it easier than others. You know, I certainly struggled. When I made a mistake, I almost went into this safe mode where I thought, right, now just try and get through the rest of the game without making an error. But that's not the mindset to have. The simple thing to say is, go back to how you felt initially. If you felt really confident going into the game, try and get yourself back into that mindset. And that might be by focusing on the present moment. Every time the thought comes into your mind about the mistake you've made, don't allow yourself to entertain it. Talk to yourself. Affirmations work as well. Whatever you need to do. Because this second one, the ball's come back to him. He's looked to play it across himself. It was a tough skill to
First
time. It was a tough skill to do. And, he's made a bit of a mess of it. And it's that horrible moment where the striker then takes it round him and he's floundering on the floor and he's trying to get there. And there's that sudden realization when he loses hope, where you see him go round him and he buries his face into the ground. And one of his defenders comes up to him afterwards and gives him a cuddle. You can see just how distraught he was. Horrible, horrible moment in front of a big crowd as well. Look, we've all been there, and it's tough. Sometimes it happens. Now, whether, you could look at it, and obviously he didn't get the technique right. If he gets it right, then it's fine. Whether it was the right decision, the ball coming across you to play it back across your body, it's a tough skill to do. At the best of times, the ball was bobbling a little bit. We can look at the technique. I just wonder whether that first mistake impacted the second mistake.
Okay, we'll move to League Two now. Cambridge v Crawley, I should say. Glenn Morris and Paul Lewis. Now, the reason I laugh about this one is because I did say to you before we came on air that I often find some goalkeepers just can't run properly. Now, I apologise if I'm offending anyone listening to this, but what is it with goalkeepers sometimes when they run and have this very weird technique, different to an outfielder?
What I'd say, because it's not a mistake, by the way, for me. I need to point that out, that it's one of these moments that he's actually made, I think, a good decision. It's proactive goalkeeping. He's on the front foot. He thinks he can impact it before the attacker gets there and cuts in on the angle and potentially squares it for an easy goal or has a one-on-one. So he's actually on the front foot, managed to get there first, just sliding tackle, brilliant. Of all places, the ball can rebound on such a tight angle. Because, by the way, if you'd have actually asked someone on that tighter angle to place it in the goal, it's not an easy skill because it's such a small angle to get it in. So for it to rebound anywhere, and it could have gone anywhere, to rebound back in the goal, it's 1 in 1,000, maybe 1 in 1,000,000. So I don't see this as a mistake. In terms of the running action, I'll tell you exactly why. It's because goalkeepers are anaerobic. They're not aerobic. We don't practice running. I advise goalkeepers not to run. So when we had like pre-season training, I remember getting a massive argument with a previous manager about this, where I'm being made to do 800 meter runs, 1500 meter runs. Why? What is that going to benefit me in the game? Apart from maybe this one moment where you might have to run out. Like, you don't run as a goalkeeper ordinarily. The only bit you do need to have is that ability to sprint. sprint 5 yards, sprint 10 yards, where you might need to come and close someone down and collapse on the ball. But other than that, you don't actually run all that often.
You don't want that base fitness, no?
It's not about, no, but base fitness you can get by, trust me, any goalkeeper will tell you, getting down and getting up. You ask an outfield player to do goalkeeper training, within 5 minutes, they're absolutely shattered. So from a goalkeeper's point of view, it's goalkeeping fitness. Goalkeeping fitness is anaerobic. What is anaerobic? It's like weight training. It's doing short, sharp bursts. So for instance, we used to do some great drills where it would be 10, 15 seconds worth of work where you're up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. But then you'll rest for 2 or 3 minutes and then you'll do it again. Up, down, up, down, up, down, rather than plodding along. The other part of it is, you want to get geeky about it, it's all about fast twitch and slow twitch fibers. So if you're practicing running, imagine what you're practicing the body to do. It's not goalkeeping movements. It's not going to help your goalkeeping. You want to be doing power work. Stuff that you might do in the gym is so much more beneficial than plodding for half an hour.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Well, that's it for another week, Richard. Before we go, we must give a shout out to a certain Henry Save All. That's Save hyphen All, who you can find on YouTube. So give that a shout, because he's done a little video that he's uploaded. We were alerted to this on Twitter, where he has reviewed, Henry's reviewed his top goalkeeping podcasts, and we made the grade.
We did. Where did we come?
I think we might have come top.
I knew that already. No, I'm delighted with this. I was buzzing when you sent it through to me. And Henry, massive thank you. I'm aware of some of the great work that Henry's doing, of course. He's got a lot of followers on YouTube, right?
He does, yeah. Around 25,000 subscribers, I believe.
Fantastic. Well, no, look, really appreciate that he's enjoying it. And I hope you guys are all enjoying it as well. We're only at the beginning of our journey. Of course, we've got a lot of podcasts to come. Both the roundup shows and, of course, the podcasts that we do with all the top, top pros. Got some really good ones lined up in the coming weeks. So, no, massive thank you to Henry. I'm glad that he's enjoying it in the way that he is.
Yes, wonderful stuff. Thank you, Henry. And a great pun on that surname there. Love it. This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, in association with GK Icon, Love Sport Radio, and Goalkeepers 365.